It can't happen here, or has it? Reflections on the US election, including what is likely to happen. Review of It Can't Happen Here. https://wp.me/p7naso3x5. I just finished rereading the classic dystopian novel It Can't Happen Here by Sinclair Lewis, about the rise to power of a fascist corporatist dictatorship in the United States. Published in 1935, the It Can't Happen Here novel emerged during a period of realistic fear that a Nazi-like regime could gain control in America. Rereading It Can't Happen Here read now while watching the growing threat of a neo-fascist movement take shape in the U.S. feels hauntingly prescient. I recall the saying that history does not repeat, but it rhymes, and as I read the book, I saw echoes of the 1930s rise to power of the Nazi and fascist states in Europe, and recalled that there was a lot of support for Hitler in the US until the outbreak of war. Many prominent figures were pro-Hitler. It could have happened here, which of course is the theme of this great dystopian thriller, It Can't Happen Here, and sadly, many fear that it is happening now. The phrase America First was first used in the 1930s by isolationists who did not want to have the US drag into a war in Europe. Overview. It Can't Happen Here depicts the ascent of a charming con man, Senator Buzz Windrup, who rallies the masses he calls the forgotten people. Once elected president, Windrup swiftly installs a fascist regime modeled after Hitler's Germany and Mussolini's Italy. He creates a police state backed by his private militia, the Minutemen. Dissent is outlawed. Labor camps are built. Jews and black Americans are rounded up, alongside political prisoners. The media is suppressed, universities are brought under government control, and the states are reorganized into districts governed by military overseers. Synopsis. It Can't Happen Here is a dystopian political novel by Sinclair Lewis, published in 1935. It explores the rise of a fascist regime in the United States led by the populist Senator Berzelius Buzz Windrup, who wins the presidency and quickly dismantles democratic institutions. The story follows Doremus Jessup, a newspaper editor who resists Windrup's authoritarian rule. He joins an underground movement spreading anti-government propaganda and is eventually imprisoned in a labor camp. Jessup escapes and flees to Canada, later returning to the US to fight in a newly established rebel province. The novel ends with a note of hope, as the fascist regime is finally overthrown by popular revolt. Lots of food for thought here. Characters. Doremus Jessup, a liberal newspaper editor and the protagonist. Buzz Windrup, a charismatic senator who becomes a dictator. Shad Ladue, a former handyman who rises through the ranks of Windrup's regime. Lorinda Pike, a feminist and outspoken government critic. Sissy Jessup, Doremus's rebellious daughter. Lee Saracen, Windrup's manipulative advisor. Julian Falk, a young student and Sissy's love interest. Mary Greenhill, Doremus's daughter, who joins the resistance. Notable quotes. Every man is a king so long as he has someone to look down on. He loved the people just as much as he feared and detested persons. It isn't what you earn but how you spend it that fixes your class. So much in a revolution is nothing but waiting. A country that tolerates evil means evil manners, standards of ethics for a generation, will be so poisoned that it never will have any good end. Other works by Sinclair Lewis. Main Street, 1920. Babbitt, 1922. Aerosmith, 1925. Elmer Gantry, 1927. Dodsworth, 1929. Ann Vickers, 1933. The Prodigal Parents, 1938. Gideon Plainish, 1943. King's Blood Royal, 1947. Books with similar themes. The Plot Against America by Philip Roth. On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century by Timothy Snyder. They Thought They Were Free, The Germans 1933-45 by Milton Mayer. 1984 by George Orwell. Asterisk Jack London, The Iron Heel. I had a lot to say on this topic but decided to limit myself to the following five poems, as I don't want to end up in a camp after all. Alligator Alcatraz opens. Our president went to the Everglades to celebrate the opening of Alligator Alcatraz, a detention center on a semi-abandoned airfield just outside Miami, surrounded by swamps filled with gators, pythons, and panthers. The inmates will be held pending deportation. No phones. No internet. No friends, family, or lawyers. Just trailers. In 100-degree heat. Hell on earth. Concentration camps in the U.S.? ICE is building detention camps, aka concentration camps, across the land. They're deporting millions of undocumented people, snatching them off the street, off buses, after immigration hearings, raiding workplaces, farms, schools, churches, flea markets. Alligator Alcatraz is only the latest. Hundreds more yet to be built in the deserts of the Southwest, swamplands of the Southeast, or maybe Alaska, America, Siberia. Being undocumented is now a crime, and if you protest, you'll be charged with assaulting heroic ICE agents. You'll be tossed, thrown in an unmarked van, and disappear. Even if you're a U.S. citizen, if you're naturalized, you'll be denaturalized. Why? Because they can. That's why. My name is classified. My name? Classified. Who I work with? Classified. Where am I taking you? Classified. Need to know basis. And you don't need to know. No phone calls. No visits. No lawyers. You want to be arrested too? For obstruction of justice. Show me your papers. Could be fake. Then they rip up your ID, claiming you had none. Now you're clearly illegal. And you disappear into the expanding gulag. Or get deported to a foreign prison. Welcome to America. Land of the free. Home of the brave. See you in the camps. For the crime of writing these poems. Freedom camps coming everywhere. Alligator Alcatraz. President tours new prison. Vows to crack down on protests against his crusade to rid America of the illegal alien invasion. Everyone without proper documentation will be arrested. Doesn't matter how long you've lived here, or if you're married to a U.S. citizen. Foreign visitors will be monitored to prevent protests of any kind. The banned country list will grow to 100. Diplomatic recognition revoked. Any country that warns citizens about traveling to the U.S. punished. Beautiful detention centers will be built everywhere. He calls them freedom centers. If you call them concentration camps, you'll be arrested for defamation, then sent to the freedom centers to work until deported or your case settles. One monitored call per week. No legal representation unless you're a U.S. citizen. Limited visits. Locations and conditions. Classified. Publishing info. Go to jail. Congress members who try to visit, arrested. See you in the camps for the crime of writing these poems. Copilot provide useful background information on the pro-Hitler movement in the U.S. You're absolutely right. The 1930s in the U.S. saw a disturbing level of sympathy for Hitler and fascist ideology, though it never coalesced into a full-blown regime. Let's unpack both the support and the reasons it didn't take hold. Pro-Nazi sentiment in 1930s America. Several factors contributed to the rise of Nazi sympathy. German-American Bund, this was the most visible pro-Nazi group, led by Fritz Kuhn. They held massive rallies, including one at Madison Square Garden in 1939 attended by over 20,000 people with swastikas and portraits of George Washington. Isolationism, many Americans, still reeling from WWI, wanted to stay out of European conflicts. Groups like America First promoted non-intervention, and some members admired Hitler's anti-communist stance. Anti-Semitism and racism, these sentiments were widespread and often aligned with Nazi ideology. Figures like Father Charles Coughlin, a radio priest, spread anti-Semitic propaganda to millions. Economic despair, the Great Depression created fertile ground for extremist ideas. Hitler's apparent success in revitalizing Germany's economy appealed to some Americans. Books: Why a Nazi-like Regime Didn't Take Hold. Sinclair Lewis's It Can't Happen Here, 1935, imagined a fascist takeover led by a populist demagogue named Buzz Windrup. The fears were real, but several factors prevented that dystopia. Strong democratic institutions, despite flaws, the U.S. had a resilient constitution, independent judiciary, and a free press that resisted authoritarian consolidation. Political moderation, mainstream parties, especially the Democrats under FDR, absorbed populist energy through the New Deal, undercutting extremist appeal. Lack of unified leadership, unlike Germany's centralized Nazi Party, American fascist groups were fragmented and often at odds with each other. Public resistance, massive counter-protests, especially by Jewish groups, veterans, and labor unions, pushed back against fascist rallies and propaganda. Timing and luck, figures like Charles Lindbergh had the charisma and following to lead a fascist movement, but never ran for office. Huey Long, a populist governor seen as a potential American dictator, was assassinated in 1935 just before Lewis finished his novel. Legacy and lessons. Lewis's novel remains eerily relevant. It reminds us that democracy isn't self-sustaining, it requires vigilance. The 1930s showed how close the U.S. came to authoritarianism, and how fragile the line between populism and fascism can be. Themes that echo in today's politics. Sinclair Lewis's novel explores how democracy can erode from within, not through foreign invasion but through charismatic populism, fear-mongering, and institutional decay. Sound familiar? Authoritarianism wrapped in patriotism, Buzz Windrup's rise mirrors modern leaders who use nationalism and traditional values to justify crackdowns on dissent, media, and minorities. Media manipulation: Windrup's regime controls information through radio propaganda. Today, disinformation spreads via social media algorithms, echo chambers, and partisan news. Economic desperation as fertile ground: the Great Depression made Americans vulnerable to Windrup's promises. Today, economic inequality and precarity fuel similar populist appeals. The cult of personality: Windrup's followers overlook his lies and incompetence because he speaks their language. This parallels how some modern political figures maintain loyalty despite scandals or failures. Resistance and moral courage: Doremus Jessup's transformation from passive observer to underground activist reminds us that silence enables tyranny, and resistance often begins with ordinary people. Books comparison to other dystopian works. Novel. Author. Key themes. Comparison to It Can't Happen Here. 1984. George Orwell. Surveillance, censorship, totalitarian control. Orwell's regime is overtly oppressive, Lewis's is insidiously American. Brave New World. Aldous Huxley. Pleasure as Control, Loss of Individuality. Huxley's dystopia sedates, Lewis's manipulates through fear and nationalism. The Plot Against America. Philip Roth. Alternate History, Fascism in the U.S. Roth imagines Lindbergh as president, Lewis uses Windrup as a stand-in for Huey Long and others. Parable of the Sower. Octavia Butler. Collapse of Society, Survival, Faith. Butler's world is post-collapse, Lewis warns of collapse from within. Lewis's novel is unique in that it's not speculative sci-fi, it's political realism with a dystopian twist. It doesn't imagine a distant future, it imagines next year. Left-pointing magnifying glass, why it didn't happen then but could now. In the 1930s, fascist sympathies existed in the U.S., but institutions like the press and courts held firm. FDR's New Deal absorbed populist energy. Fascist groups lacked unity and leadership. Figures like Huey Long were cut short, he was assassinated in 1935. Today, those guardrails feel shakier. The novel's relevance lies in its reminder that democracy is not self-sustaining, it requires vigilance, accountability, and moral clarity. Substack. Substack Podcast. Medium. Wattpad. Spotify Podcast. It Can't Happen Here, Clear Warning of the Future Coming True? I just finished rereading the classic dystopian novel It Can't Happen Here by Sinclair Lewis, about the rise to power of a fascist corporatist dictatorship in the United States. Published in 1935, the novel emerged during a period of realistic fear that a Nazi-like regime could gain control in America. Rereading it now while watching the growing threat of a neo-fascist movement take shape in the U.S. feels hauntingly prescient. The novel depicts the ascent of a charming con man, Senator Buzz Windrup, who rallies the masses he calls the Forgotten People. Once elected president, Windrup swiftly installs a fascist regime modeled after Hitler's Germany and Mussolini's Italy. He creates a police state backed by his private militia, the Minutemen. Dissent is outlawed. Labor camps are built. Jews and black Americans are rounded up, alongside political prisoners. The media is suppressed, universities are brought under government control, and the states are reorganized into districts governed by military overseers. Synopsis. It Can't Happen Here is a dystopian political novel by Sinclair Lewis, published in 1935. It explores the rise of a fascist regime in the United States led by the populist Senator Berzelius Buzz Windrup, who wins the presidency and quickly dismantles democratic institutions. The story follows Doremus Jessup, a newspaper editor who resists Windrup's authoritarian rule. He joins an underground movement spreading anti-government propaganda and is eventually imprisoned in a labor camp. Jessup escapes and flees to Canada, later returning to the U.S. to fight in a newly established rebel province. The novel ends with a note of hope, as the fascist regime is finally overthrown by popular revolt. Lots of food for thought here. Characters. Doremus Jessup, a liberal newspaper editor and the protagonist. Buzz Windrup, a charismatic senator who becomes a dictator. Shad Ladue, a former handyman who rises through the ranks of Windrup's regime. Lorinda Pike, a feminist and outspoken government critic. Sissy Jessup, Doremus's rebellious daughter. Lee Saracen, Windrup's manipulative advisor. Julian Falk, a young student and Sissy's love interest. Mary Greenhill, Doremus's daughter, who joins the resistance. Notable quotes. Every man is a king so long as he has someone to look down on. He loved the people just as much as he feared and detested persons. It isn't what you earn but how you spend it that fixes your class. So much in a revolution is nothing but waiting. A country that tolerates evil means evil manners, standards of ethics for a generation, will be so poisoned that it never will have any good end. Other works by Sinclair Lewis. Main Street, 1920. Babbitt, 1922. Aerosmith, 1925. Elmer Gantry, 1927. Dodsworth, 1929. And Vickers, 1933. The Prodigal Parents, 1938. Gideon Plainish, 1943. King's Blood Royal, 1947. Books with similar themes. The Plot Against America by Philip Roth. On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century by Timothy Snyder. They Thought They Were Free, The Germans 1933-45 by Milton Mayer. 1984 by George Orwell. Asterisk Jack London The Iron Heel. Freedom Camps and Other American Fantasies. I wrote the following poems and stories during Trump 1.0 and updated some of them recently. Needless to say, these are my political rants and do not reflect the views of any of my prior employers. Everyone is entitled to their opinion, these are my opinions. You can disagree, but if you comment, please do so respectfully. Index. Lisa's death, just another day in post-Roe America. Operation Deportation. The color of politics in the U.S. Be afraid, America. Harris is not a communist, so shut up with that nonsense. Newsflash, it's 2024. Communism is dead. The new colors of American politics. The Springfield incident. Doubles down. New morality standards. In the year 2025, madness took over. Patriot Games. Why Mega? Scatterbrain candidate. Five signs of the apocalypse. The Great Wall. Welcome to America. Returning America to a Christian paradise. Walls. Haiti eating dogs, oh my. Lies and more lies. Not Mussolini, rather Berlusconi. Alligator Alcatraz opens. Concentration camps in the U.S. My name is classified. Freedom camps coming everywhere. Lisa's death, just another day in post-Roe America. Lisa had to see a doctor. She was 13 years old. Her abusive stepfather had raped her after nearly killing her mother. He was on a drug-fueled binge after losing his job at the local factory due to mandatory drug testing. He blamed everything on the Mexican immigrants in town, accusing them of bringing drugs and taking jobs. Lisa was spiraling, trying to figure out what to do. Under the new laws, she knew getting an abortion would be almost impossible. Her best friend's mother, Maria Garcia, drove her to the clinic, where they met one of the last remaining OBGYN doctors in Texas. Lisa listened to sweet music on her iPod. It calmed her down. The elderly doctor, one of few still practicing, examined Lisa. Most had closed their doors under pressure from legal harassment, protests, skyrocketing malpractice insurance premiums, and the constant threat of lawsuits from bounty hunters. Suddenly, Lisa felt something move inside her. The doctor said, "I can hear your heartbeat," but he was speaking to the unborn child. He asked Lisa what had happened, how she got pregnant, who the father was. Maria Garcia explained the horrific situation and her fear that Lisa's stepfather might kill Lisa, the unborn child, her mother, and even herself. He was violent, unpredictable, and hateful toward immigrants like Maria. The doctor explained the stark reality. Under the new nationwide ban, abortion was illegal after a detectable fetal heartbeat, with only three exceptions. Violent stranger rape reported within 2 weeks. Incest reported within 2 weeks. To save the life of the pregnant person. None of these exceptions applied. The doctor could be criminally charged for even discussing abortion. To protect himself, he agreed not to record the visit, provided they paid in cash. He urged Maria to report the threat to the police and advised her not to speak of the visit again. The clinic nurse contacted Lisa's best friend, who reported the situation to authorities. Under state law, anyone suspected of assisting someone in seeking a prohibited abortion had to be reported to police for attempted murder of an unborn person, a felony under new personhood laws granting full legal rights to embryos and fetuses. Police were called. The doctor and nurse were arrested and charged with discussing and facilitating an illegal abortion. Lisa's mother and Maria were arrested on similar grounds. Lisa was taken home. Her stepfather murdered her, her mother, Maria Garcia, and her friend. He was arrested and charged with murder and murder of an unborn child. The doctor was not charged due to insufficient evidence, but he closed the last OBGYN clinic in town. The news barely made local headlines. National media had moved on. Pro-life demonstrators cheered the clinic's closure. Bounty hunters descended on the town, eager for payouts. Just another day in America. Operation Deportation. The sweeping deportation campaign is reshaping the U.S. labor market. Food and housing costs surge as foreign workers are rounded up. The campaign targets Dreamers, many raised in the U.S., and includes spouses of U.S. citizens who married while undocumented. These individuals face 5 or 10 year reentry bans. Birthright citizenship is halted. Only children born to U.S. citizens, lawful permanent residents, or abroad to U.S. citizen parents are recognized as citizens. The United Nations condemns the deportation drive, urging global reform. The Supreme Court refuses to intervene, stating immigration policy falls under executive authority. It rules that the 14th Amendment does not apply to children born to undocumented immigrants. President Trump announces the U.S. will withdraw from the UN, ILO, and other global organizations. The Republican-led Senate passes legislation requiring these bodies to shut down operations in the U.S. within a year. Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, and Sudan join America in leaving the UN. The U.S. also exits NATO, withdrawing troops from Korea, Japan, and other global posts. Troops return to reinforce U.S. borders, doubling as immigration agents. The State Department's Consular Affairs and Immigration Bureaus are merged into a new cabinet agency, the Department of Immigration and Border Control. All immigrant visa processing pauses for a year. Student visas are suspended for 1 year, though current students may remain until graduation. With Republican control solidified through gerrymandering and voting purges, Congress authorizes unlimited funding to support mass deportations. Operation Deportation begins with the construction of detention camps along the southern border. During detention, immigrants may work in agriculture and construction on a temporary basis. Employers are required to provide housing, basic medical care, and secure work zones. Minimum wage applies. Once detention orders are finalized, individuals are deported. The color of politics in the U.S. Red, blue, green, and purple now represent political affiliations in America. Red is associated with right-wing movements worldwide. Blue with progressive parties. Green with environmental politics. Purple signals political blending. Historically, red symbolized leftist movements. But by the early 1970s, pundits flipped the palette. Red became right-wing, blue the left. This color system spread globally. Today, murmurs of a national divorce and a second civil war grow louder in red states. But America's division is not clean. In blue states like California, Oregon, and Washington, rural regions are ruby red. In red states like Texas and Florida, urban centers are blue. Many places remain intertwined. Take Virginia, for example. Generally, red America, rural South, Midwest, and mountain states. Blue America, West Coast, East Coast, urban centers. Will Civil War 2.0 erupt? I doubt it. I believe and hope that America can again be the United States of America. United beyond color-coded borders. Be afraid, America. If Donald Trump and J.D. Vance return to power, fear what follows. First, undocumented immigrants will be rounded up. Then, legal immigrants who lose TPS protections. Dreamers. Muslims and non-Christians. Journalists and teachers fired for being unpatriotic. Fired federal workers, LGBTQ people, deviants. Leftists, socialists, BLM protesters. Left-wing college professors. Journalists and bloggers, podcasters, and, inevitably, Jews. And naturalized Americans who can be denaturalized. If they are critics of the regime. People searching for loved ones will be thrown into camps, too. Everyone packed into freedom camps. Forced labor begins, minimum wage or less. Farms and factories profit from this shadow workforce. These won't be called concentration camps, but that's what they'll be. Many will be located in desert bases, but some will be built near big cities to facilitate forced labor activities. Prisoners will work from dawn to dusk, with minimal food and medical care. Muslims and Jews forced to eat pork or starve. Hindus and Buddhists are forced to eat meat, or starve. Vegans, vegetarians, and people with food allergies won't be accommodated. There will be 3 shifts per day. In the evening, everyone who is not at work will be required to attend re-education sessions and mandatory chapel services. Access to the internet will be severely limited, as will access to phone, family visits, and consultations with attorneys. Miranda rights will be suspended indefinitely, as will habeas corpus hearings. The senior leadership will not care. America will quickly grow tired of these stories. And then, we'll learn to turn a blind eye to state-sponsored injustice. Protesting will earn you a ticket to the camps that don't exist. The existence or non-existence of the freedom camps, their location, conditions, and who is detained will be considered classified information. Need-to-know basis, and relatives, lawyers, the press, and Congress have no legitimate right to such classified information. Anyone who publishes such information will be sent to the camps. Harris is not a communist, so shut up with that nonsense. Lately, the airwaves of the Fox Alternative Universe have been flooded with pernicious nonsense spoken by pundits and Republican leaders alike. The talking point? That Comrade Kamala and the entire Democratic Party have been taken over by Marxists, determined to turn the U.S. into Cuba, Venezuela, Communist China, or North Korea, but oddly not Russia. Some now claim Russia is our friend. Anyone alive for the last 30 years knows communism died a long time ago. There are no communists anywhere. Even in China. No one practices or truly believes in classic Marxist communism. And Kamala Harris may be many things, but a hardcore Marxist communist working to turn the U.S. into a communist country is not one of them. The only people who believe this nonsense are aging John Birchers, who still scream about the communist menace like it's 1955, and perhaps a few leftover left-wing radicals in Berkeley, who still romanticize Marx. Newsflash. It's 2024. Communism is dead. So please just shut up. Stop talking about communists and other imaginary bogeymen. The new colors of American politics. The United States seems more divided than ever, split into camps now color-coded by identity, geography, and party affiliation. Black Americans, mostly living in blue states and urban areas, embracing progressive and inclusive visions. Black life matters. Blue, urban dwellers, college towns, multicultural and progressive communities. Brown, Hispanic Americans, especially concentrated in the Southwest and Texas. Green, the environmentally focused left, mostly on the West Coast. Red, MAGA, mostly elderly white Christians in rural or exurban areas of the Sun Belt. Red, Native American living on or off the reservation, sometimes aligned with conservative values or skeptical of both parties. Pink, LGBTQ and Americans, living predominantly in blue states. Purple, mixed political zones, especially suburban swing areas where cultural lines blur. White, many white Americans reside in red states or rural exurbs, often holding conservative, traditional values, and expressing anxiety about America's shifting demographics. Yellow, Asian Americans, largely concentrated in blue metro areas and Hawaii. The Springfield incident. A wave of false accusations against Haitian immigrants' claims of pet killings led to a dangerous escalation in Springfield, Ohio. The president held a rally to denounce supposed immigrant pet abuse. The Proud Boys and other right-wing extremists announced plans to conduct citizen arrests of the entire Haitian community, vowing to drive them out to save the town. The president declared, "Time to deport all Haitians. When I'm president," he added, "we'll eliminate immigration from shithole countries like Haiti and deport Haitians en masse. They're horrid animals." He encouraged the Proud Boys to rough them up, suggesting they leave for Oakland, Kamala Harris's hometown. Following the rally, armed members of extremist groups attacked Haitians in the streets, killing residents and burning businesses. Trump refused to condemn the violence and promised to cover the legal fees of patriots who cleaned up the city. But the town rallied back, residents defended their neighbors and held a press conference vowing to rebuild the Haitian community. The National Association of Caribbean Americans endorsed Kamala Harris, promising a renewed future for Caribbean immigrants, including Haitians. Doubles down. The president is a stubborn old man. Adamant in his delusions. Doubling down on racist lies. Comments about Haitians. Eating cats, ducks, dogs, and geese. Appealing to his racist white base. Who feast on his hateful words. Choose fascism or democracy, Brady's touch. Choose fascism or democracy. That is the choice this election season. Will we choose the future or the past? The choice is up to all of us. Our choice. Some want to impose theocracy. Did the president commit treason? Will he finally face justice? That is something we must discuss. Our voice. New morality standards. After a disputed election, the president announces far-reaching changes, a full-blown right-wing revolution. He reveals that the federal government will now implement strict morality guidelines that all federal employees and contractors must follow. Governor Ron DeSantis is appointed director of federal personnel to enforce these new requirements. Federal employee standards. Under the new guidelines, all federal employees must be of sound social standing, disclose and be free of any LGBTQ and identity or status. LGBTQ and individuals will be disqualified from federal employment and terminated. Be members of a Christian church and attend weekly services. Pass mandatory drug and alcohol screenings. Work in federally designated drug-free, alcohol-free, and smoke-free zones. The federal government will only recognize Christian religious observances. Employees will receive Christmas and Easter off but will not be permitted leave for non-Christian or non-religious holidays. All federal workers must sign a mandatory loyalty oath pledging allegiance to the president's policies and affirming that they are Christians who believe in Christ. Dismantling diversity protections. Diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, programs are eliminated. The collection of DEI statistics is forbidden. Government security clearances are restricted to native-born Americans. Naturalized citizens are banned from federal employment. Federal employees may not marry foreign nationals, those married to non-citizens will be terminated. Morality enforcement and personal conduct. All federal employees are banned from premarital and extramarital affairs. Gay marriage is no longer recognized. Marriage is defined as a union between one biological male and one biological female who intend to bear children. Childless couples are not considered legitimately married. Transgender status is not recognized. Federal ID documents can no longer be changed to reflect gender identity. Bathrooms are assigned strictly by birth assigned gender. Pronouns and nicknames may not reflect one's true gender identity. Discrimination against LGBTQ and individuals is legally sanctioned under federal law, including termination for forbidden conduct. Bans and federal surveillance. Abortion is banned. Travel to obtain an abortion is illegal. Doctors who perform abortions face felony murder charges. Any past abortion disqualifies an individual from federal employment. Prostitution, pornography, and gambling are outlawed. Federal morality police are created to monitor compliance nationwide. Judicial response and state opposition. The Supreme Court declines to hear challenges to the new standards, stating that federal employment policy falls under presidential authority. The court also overturns gay marriage rights and allows local governments to ban LGBTQ and status or actions. Legalize discrimination. Ban interracial marriage. Governors of Western states declare that they will not enforce the federal morality rules. West Coast states are designated sanctuary zones for LGBTQ and individuals. East Coast governors and the governor of Illinois join in resistance. President Trump responds, threatening to charge opposing governors with insurrection. A nation on the brink. The country stands divided. Red states cheer, blue states resist. Civil war looms. In the year 2025, madness took over. I often thought back on the Trumpian years as an aberration that Americans would wake up and realize they had been conned. That con man Don was not their friend. That the Republicans, if they could, would turn Social Security and Medicare over to the private sector, enriching Wall Street, while screwing everyone else, laughing at the fools who believed they cared about them at all. The 2024 fall election filled the airwaves and internet with the vilest conspiracy theories. So many people believed the Q nonsense, that there was a secret cabal of cannibals and child molesting pedophiles, drinking children's blood in satanic rituals, led by shape-shifting aliens. They believed he was anointed by God to battle the satanic Democrats, and that someday soon, a storm would erupt, and all the evil ones would be rounded up, and he would once again be president. The latest craze? A theory that schools are telling children to use litter boxes because they identify as cats. And so it goes. More madness everywhere. More madness. More drugs. More guns. Not just in the US, but overseas too. Everywhere. Leaders are unhinged. Conspiracy theories run amok. Pundits pontificate. Guns proliferate. Hard to see how this ends well. Patriot Games. The right-wing spin masters are at it again, turning the greatest assault on American democracy, the storming of the Capitol on January 6th, into a patriotic uprising. They frame it as a battle against a communist dictatorship in the making, fighting to restore traditional Judeo-Christian values, led by false Christian prophets, celebrating the rise of Christian fascism in America. Calling the angry mob patriots is an affront to real patriots. Our grandparents fought in World War II against the Nazis. They were the original Antifa. Fox News now sides with neo-fascist autocrats. Hungary is their newfound best friend, proudly promoting an illiberal democratic state. Shades of other autocrats. The far right celebrates. Even Myanmar's military coup is praised as something that could happen here. They follow the mad dictates of a twice impeached former president, siding with democracy's enemies, doing Putin's bidding, killing democracy to save it. As our democracy lies dying, the mobs pray to take our country back, to make America great and white again. Soon, we'll see the Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, Boogaloo Bois, and others marching in the streets under Nazi and Confederate banners, cheering their great leader as he storms back into power. God save America. If he or she still cares. Why MAGA? The question remains. Why do so many Americans still support the president? I just don't understand it. Not at all. Why would anyone support a fascist dictator wannabe who promises to destroy democracy and impose Christian fascism, rounding up millions of undocumented immigrants, including dreamers and the spouses of U.S. citizens, and no doubt throwing millions of dissenters into prison as he purges America of leftists and critics? Why would anyone support a failed narcissistic a-hole who lost the last election, was impeached twice, convicted of multiple charges, fraud, defamation, sexual assault, who proudly ended Roe v. Wade, who shows no empathy? Not at all. You know that if he's elected, millions of people will be rounded up, disappearing into camps, where they'll languish for years, awaiting deportation. You know what comes next. They'll round up leftists, atheists, non-Christians, the LGBTQ community, Muslims, and of course, Jews. As General Milley put it, he is a fascist to the core, the most dangerous man in the country. With all these warnings, why would anyone still vote for him? Yet despite it all, he was elected, and now he has begun implementing his MAGA revolution as the country prepares for the chaos of his second term. Scatterbrain candidate, the former president, is showing signs that he has dementia. His comments lately are scattered all over the place and makes no sense. What makes less sense is that 40% Americans still support him for president. They must be scattered brain themselves. 5 signs of the apocalypse. 1. Watching the evening news spin forth the latest scandals do J-O-U-R. The fake news and spin, the daily propaganda, and the utter destruction of common sense and reason. The thought comes to mind, are we living in the end of times? Is the apocalypse drawing nigh? 2. The signs of the end times have been endlessly debated among the Christian right-wing blogosphere ever since Israel was reborn, apparently triggering the cosmic countdown. According to Revelation 12, a pregnant woman will be hunted by a satanic 7-headed dragon, eager to eat her unborn child. The woman will be clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and a crown of 12 stars on her head. They speak of astronomical signs, like the image formed in the sky on September 23, when Virgo represents the woman in Revelation 12. She stands over the moon, under 9 stars and 3 planets, clothed in sunlight. To trust the right God, he said, accept his gift of grace and forgiveness. That's all we must do to be ready. Yet September 23 passed, and the world is still here. Are there other signs that the end is near? Jesus himself said, he didn't know the date or hour, but of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. Matthew 24:36. 3. Still, the fear persists in my heart. As I watch the news, the days grow darker. Moment by moment, the light of reason flickers, replaced by famines, wars, rumors and false prophets galore. All according to Revelation. The false prophets claim God's plan unfolding as we speak. Wars, earthquakes, famine, and technology. Microchip implants have already been tested in Sweden. They speak of a cashless society, citing PayPal, Google Wallet. Even India's failed experiment with wiping out the 100 rupee note. Yes, the signs are all around us. If only we have eyes to see, ears to hear, and minds to understand. 4. Non-Christians will find it hard to believe. We are living in the last days. 2 Peter 3:3-4. In the last days, scoffers will do every wrong they can think of, laughing at the truth. So Jesus promised to come back, did he? Then where is he? He'll never come. Yes, why hasn't Jesus returned? Is that another sign of the end? Many claim the Antichrist's arrival marks the final hour. Little children, it is the last hour. And as you have heard that the Antichrist is coming, even now many Antichrists have come. John 2:18. What moral conditions define the last days? People will be lovers of themselves. Lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive. Disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy. 2 Timothy 3:1-5. So true in the age of Trump. And the rise of new oligarchs. The swamp monsters have slithered out from dark corners, proclaiming it is their time to rule the world. The Bible confirms these dire prophecies. 5. Talk of peace and safety is a sign of the last days. 1 Thessalonians 5:2-3. The day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night, while people are saying peace and safety. Destruction will come on them suddenly. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come. Matthew 24:14. Yes, I say to you, when the world speaks of peace, when the Korean lions lay down their weapons and proclaim brotherhood, perhaps the end times are truly near. Some cite 7 biblically prophesied events that could only now come to pass. The State of Israel reborn in 1948. The hydrogen bomb. Mutually assured destruction. A connected world. Once these things begin, the generation alive at that time will by no means pass away till all these things take place. Matthew 24:34. And so, we close where we began, fearing that the end of the world is near. How it ends, no one truly knows. Perhaps zombies or nuclear winter will claim us. Perhaps a supervolcano will blow us to oblivion. Alien invaders? An AI uprising? Terminator land? Perhaps the rapture will come, and the grim visions of Revelation will unfold before our eyes. Perhaps nothing will happen. We'll survive the end times. Stumble through the madness. Yet I'm afraid the end is coming sooner than we think. And so, the world ends much as it began, with a big bang or a soft whimper. God only knows. And he is silent as usual. The Great Wall. In the dying days of the U.S. Empire, the first emperor of the U.S. decreed that a Great Wall be built in the southern Badlands to seal off America from the unwashed masses assembled on our southern shores, declaring that America must be defended at all costs from the barbarian hordes coming across the southern border. America must be preserved. America must again be white, Christian and pure. Only then can America achieve its rightful role as the last bastion of the true faith. And so the Great Wall was built. And like other great walls, it was doomed to failure. Like Hadrian's Wall and the Chinese Great Wall, the barbarians kept coming, and the empire was overwhelmed, and the wall failed, and America was no longer white, Christian and pure. Welcome to America. Welcome to America. Land of the free. Home of the brave. We welcome visitors to America. As long as you're rich and white and leaving soon, we welcome immigrants. So long as you're willing to work. For subminimum wages. Welcome to America. Muslims need not apply. If you're undocumented or a refugee, you will be treated as a high security threat to the nation. Your children will be taken from you. And you have no right to know where they are. That's classified, need to know. And you, your attorneys, and your embassy do not need to know. And if, while in detention, you act up, you cry, you misbehave, or you simply act like a normal child, you will be subject to severe punishment, including beating and torture, for daring to complain about your treatment. And those who protest, those who challenge the policy, will be rounded up. Soon enough, your turn is next. Get ready. America, land of the free, and home of the brave. Returning America to a Christian paradise. El Presidente for life, said in a speech to a Christian activist group, calls for a return to traditional values that made America great. Folks, we need to go back to those days when everyone was a Christian. God was in schools. No one worried about offending Jews or others by saying Merry Christmas. We had an Easter break and a Christmas break from school. Asking what church you went to was just welcoming you to the community. I recall in America when people went to church every weekend, when stores were closed on Sundays, Christmas, Easter, New Year's, July 4th, and Thanksgiving. When Black Friday didn't exist. When no one knew what Islam was. Because there were few, if any, Muslims in America. Same for Buddhists, Hindus, and other minority religions. Atheism was not a badge of pride. Movies and TV were family entertainment. Not showcases of violence, sexual immorality, and contempt for Christians. When being a Boy Scout was a good thing. Not a curse word. Prostitution was illegal. Abortion was illegal. Homosexuality was illegal. Transgenderism didn't exist. Men were men. Women were women. Women got married. Stayed home with their children. Men earned enough to support their families. People had three or more children. Parents ruled their children, not the other way around. Sex was for married couples only. Extramarital affairs were condemned, not celebrated. Same-sex marriage was absurd, contrary to God's will. Pornography was illegal. Drugs were illegal. Drinking was frowned upon, if not outright illegal. We served in the military. Respected our troops. Respected the police. Respected authority. Yes, folks, we must return to an America that was a true Christian paradise. And that is why we must build this wonderful wall against the barbarian hordes along our southern borders. The barbarians are coming to loot, rape, and kill our God-fearing Christian folk. And the wall, decreed by God Himself, to keep America pure, to make America proud again. Let us vow together to build that wall and preserve these Christian states of America from the enemies of freedom waiting just across that wall. Walls. He wants a wall between America and Mexico. A wall against the southern hordes, built from fear and hate. A wall to make America safe. A wall to make America great again. And yet I wonder, will this wall fall? Like the Berlin Wall. Like the Great Wall of China. All the others. They all failed. Everyone. Walls divide us. Walls make us into different tribes. The pure and the impure. Saint Reagan once said, "Tear down this wall. Will future presidents tear down this begotten wall? Or will it become a tourist attraction? Another monument to paranoia and power? Haiti eating dogs, oh my. They have gone off the racist deep end. Speaking of Haitians eating dogs and cats, implying they engage in weird voodoo rituals. Lies and more lies. Watching the president's team lie. The default position. Lie all the time. And now, no one believes anything they say. Foreign leaders have figured him out. As have his domestic enemies. Taco is a polite description. He lies, pontificates, and barks a lot. Issuing one extreme order after another. But he lacks follow through. So many things just don't happen. When challenged, he backs down. If you flatter him, thank him, kiss his proverbial ass, he'll come along and do what you want. Provided he can spin it as a great success to his cult-like base. Meloni, rather Berlusconi. Years ago, an Italian political leader said, he is not another Mussolini or Hitler. Rather, he's more like Berlusconi. Erratic, loud, and ultimately ignored by Italy's elites. He lacked follow-through. And as G.W. Bush put it, lacked the vision thing. After 5 years of chaos, he faded. And Italy returned to normal. Alligator Alcatraz opens. Our president went to the Everglades to celebrate the opening of Alligator Alcatraz, a detention center on a semi-abandoned airfield just outside Miami, surrounded by swamps filled with gators, pythons, and panthers. The inmates will be held pending deportation. No phones. No internet. No friends, family, or lawyers. Just trailers. In 100-degree heat. Hell on earth. Concentration camps in the U.S. ICE is building detention camps, aka concentration camps, across the land. They're deporting millions of undocumented people. Snatching them off the street. Off buses. After immigration hearings. Raiding workplaces. Farms. Schools. Churches. Flea markets. Alligator Alcatraz is only the latest. Hundreds more yet to be built. In the deserts of the Southwest. Swamplands of the Southeast. Or maybe Alaska. America, Siberia. Being undocumented is now a crime. And if you protest, you'll be charged with assaulting heroic ICE agents. You'll be tossed, thrown in an unmarked van, and disappear. Even if you're a US citizen. If you're naturalized, you'll be denaturalized. Why? Because they can. That's why. My name is classified. My name? Classified. Who I work with? Classified. Where am I taking you? Classified. Need to know basis. And you don't need to know. No phone calls. No visits. No lawyers. You want to be arrested too? For obstruction of justice. Show me your papers. Could be fake. Then they rip up your ID, claiming you had none. Now you're clearly illegal. And you disappear into the expanding gulag. Or get deported to a foreign prison. Welcome to America. Land of the free. Home of the brave. See you in the camps. For the crime of writing these poems. Freedom camps coming everywhere. Alligator Alcatraz. President tours new prison. vows to crack down on protests against his crusade to rid America of an illegal alien invasion. Everyone without proper documentation will be arrested. Doesn't matter how long you've lived here, or if you're married to a U.S. citizen. Foreign visitors will be monitored to prevent protests of any kind. The banned country list will grow to 100. Diplomatic recognition revoked. Any country that warns citizens about traveling to the U.S. punished. Beautiful detention centers will be built everywhere. He calls them freedom centers. If you call them concentration camps, you'll be arrested for defamation, then sent to the freedom centers to work until deported or your case settles. One monitored call per week. No legal representation unless you're a U.S. citizen. Limited visits. Locations and conditions. Classified. Publishing info. Go to jail. Congress members who try to visit. Arrested. See you in the camps. For the crime of writing these poems. Some background information on the pro-Hitler movement in the U.S. You're absolutely right. The 1930s in the U.S. saw a disturbing level of sympathy for Hitler and fascist ideology, though it never coalesced into a full-blown regime. Let's unpack both the support and the reasons it didn't take hold. Pro-Nazi sentiment in 1930s America. Several factors contributed to the rise of Nazi sympathy. German-American Bund, this was the most visible pro-Nazi group, led by Fritz Kuhn. They held massive rallies, including one at Madison Square Garden in 1939 attended by over 20,000 people with swastikas and portraits of George Washington. Isolationism, many Americans, still reeling from WWI, wanted to stay out of European conflicts. Groups like America First promoted non-intervention, and some members admired Hitler's anti-communist stance. Anti-Semitism and racism, these sentiments were widespread and often aligned with Nazi ideology. Figures like Father Charles Coughlin, a radio priest, spread anti-Semitic propaganda to millions. Economic despair, the Great Depression created fertile ground for extremist ideas. Hitler's apparent success in revitalizing Germany's economy appealed to some Americans. Books: Why a Nazi-like regime didn't take hold. Sinclair Lewis's It Can't Happen Here, 1935, imagined a fascist takeover led by a populist demagogue named Buzz Windrup. The fears were real, but several factors prevented that dystopia. Strong democratic institutions, despite flaws, the U.S. had a resilient constitution, independent judiciary, and a free press that resisted authoritarian consolidation. Political moderation, mainstream parties, especially the Democrats under FDR, absorbed populist energy through the New Deal, undercutting extremist appeal. Lack of unified leadership, unlike Germany's centralized Nazi Party, American fascist groups were fragmented and often at odds with each other. Public resistance, massive counter-protests, especially by Jewish groups, veterans, and labor unions, pushed back against fascist rallies and propaganda. Timing and luck, figures like Charles Lindbergh had the charisma and following to lead a fascist movement, but never ran for office. Huey Long, a populist governor seen as a potential American dictator, was assassinated in 1935 just before Lewis finished his novel. Legacy and lessons. Lewis's novel remains eerily relevant. It reminds us that democracy isn't self-sustaining, it requires vigilance. The 1930s showed how close the U.S. came to authoritarianism, and how fragile the line between populism and fascism can be. If you'd like, I can help you explore how these themes echo in today's political climate, or how It Can't Happen Here compares to other dystopian works. Absolutely, Jake. It Can't Happen Here doesn't just echo, it reverberates through today's political landscape like a warning siren muffled by complacency. Let's break it down. themes that echo in today's politics. Sinclair Lewis's novel explores how democracy can erode from within, not through foreign invasion but through charismatic populism, fear-mongering, and institutional decay. Sound familiar? Authoritarianism wrapped in patriotism, Buzz Winthrop's rise mirrors modern leaders who use nationalism and traditional values to justify crackdowns on dissent, media, and minorities. Media manipulation, Winthrop's regime controls information through radio propaganda. Today, disinformation spreads via social media algorithms, echo chambers, and partisan news. Economic desperation as fertile ground, the Great Depression made Americans vulnerable to Winthrop's promises. Today, economic inequality and precarity fuel similar populist appeals. The cult of personality, Winthrop's followers overlook his lies and incompetence because he speaks their language. This parallels how some modern political figures maintain loyalty despite scandals or failures. Resistance and moral courage, Doremus Jessup's transformation from passive observer to underground activist reminds us that silence enables tyranny, and resistance often begins with ordinary people. Book's comparison to other dystopian works. Novel. Author. Key themes. Comparison to It Can't Happen Here. 1984. George Orwell. Surveillance, censorship, totalitarian control. Orwell's regime is overtly oppressive, Lewis's is insidiously American. Brave New World. Aldous Huxley. Pleasure as control, loss of individuality. Huxley's dystopia sedates, Lewis's manipulates through fear and nationalism. The Plot Against America. Philip Roth. Alternate History, Fascism in the U.S. Roth imagines Lindbergh as president, Lewis uses Winthrop as a stand-in for Huey Long and others. Parable of the Sower. Octavia Butler. Collapse of Society, Survival, Faith. Butler's world is post-collapse, Lewis warns of collapse from within. Lewis's novel is unique in that it's not speculative sci-fi, it's political realism with a dystopian twist. It doesn't imagine a distant future, it imagines next year. Left-pointing magnifying glass, why it didn't happen then but could now. In the 1930s, fascist sympathies existed in the U.S., but institutions like the press and courts held firm. FDR's New Deal absorbed populist energy. Fascist groups lacked unity and leadership. Figures like Huey Long were cut short, he was assassinated in 1935. Today, those guardrails feel shakier. The novel's relevance lies in its reminder that democracy is not self-sustaining, it requires vigilance, accountability, and moral clarity.